Welcome to VFN TV and the daily VFN radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. That's L-I-G-H-T, light, with your host, Greg Lancaster.
Welcome to VFN TV. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and joining me today in a few moments is John Ramos. Well, you think about it, the Internet of Things, what is it, and what does it have to do with your future? First of all, let's think about the Internet. Everybody's getting on it or on it, and if you're not on it, when you actually call a business or you call someone and tell them something and they put it in their business, guess what they do with that? They normally enter that in some sort of secure database and put it on the Internet. So many things are on the Internet that they were concerned about, you know, terrorist attacks shutting down our power system and our power grid. But let's just go back. What happens when you push one button and make one request on the Internet? I mean, how does it work? What really goes on? Because we push that button and something happens on our computer, but there's so much more to it than that. Let's just take a simple look at what happens when you ask the computer, the Internet for one thing. Watch this.
Have you ever wondered what happens when someone in England visits the World Science Festival's webpage? First, their computer needs to ask the World Science Festival server for a copy of that webpage. The computer sticks this request into a virtual envelope called a packet, wrapped with specific information about that request, including the World Science Festival's IP address. The computer sends this packet out of the house and below the street via large underground copper wires. It passes through small regional networks before ending up here at Telehouse North in London. Telehouse North is England's main internet hub. The IP address on this packet tells the hub that the World Science Festival server is actually in Los Angeles. So Telehouse North sends the packet out as light across the Atlantic, over fiber optic cables buried deep beneath the ocean. The packet ends up here, 60 Hudson Street, New York City, the largest internet hub on the East Coast. This hub sends the packet through a series of regional networks connecting New York to Los Angeles, where the World Science Festival server resides. The server reads the request and gets ready to send the web page to England. But web pages made up of images and text are too large to send as a single packet of data. So how do we get it back to England? Imagine a group of 5,000 tourists visiting New York City in a single gigantic tour bus. They are way up in Harlem, but they want to visit the Statue of Liberty before it closes. But it's rush hour, on a Friday. There's no way that giant bus is going to fit through those crazy congested streets. So they decide to get off the bus and spread out. Some take the subway, some take cabs, a few rent bikes, and some even take kayaks down the Hudson River. How they get there doesn't matter, as long as they get there on time. Likewise, for the internet to work efficiently, this web page is pulverized into thousands of tiny packets of data, each one wrapped with all of the information it needs to rebuild itself in England. The packets are sent to LA's One Wilshire hub, which checks the traffic report before sending them off. Through miles and miles of land they travel, checking in through different hubs. Like our New York City tourists, those packets don't care how they get there, as long as they get there as fast as possible. Most of them will go through 60 Hudson in New York, where they are redirected back to England as light, riding a fiber of glass as thick as a silver dollar. Then back on copper wire, through regional British networks, until all the packets reach their destination and... And this epic journey? It all happens in about a second. Along with trillions upon trillions of similar journeys that happen each and every day. On this remarkable, easy to take for granted, network of networks we call the Internet.
It all happens in 1 second. You pushed one button, you type in VFNTV.com, pull up our website, and all that's taking place all around the world at the speed of light going on copper. It's amazing, isn't it? But what happens with that is it passes through all these different governments and systems, and they get to spy on and check on and see what you're pulling up on your internet. What button did you push? And, you know, more about you. What did you buy from Amazon.com? It's called like the the Internet of Things. But first, I want you to see this IoT. If you see this, remember, this means something, because what they're saying right now, they're saying they're just showing that particular IoT, which stands for the Internet of Things. You got to remember, this, they're talking about everything we're talking about on today's program, which means everything that you're doing and they're monitoring, it happens on the Internet of Things. As a matter, let me take a look at this as it begins to explain a little bit. As this lady's driving in her car, maybe you can relate to this, and how the Internet of Things, all these things around us, can help us out. Take a look.
The Internet of Things is changing much about the world we live in, from the way we drive to how we make purchases, and even how we get energy for our homes. Sophisticated sensors and chips are embedded in the physical things that surround us, each transmitting valuable data. Data that lets us better understand how these things work and work together. But how exactly do all these devices share such large quantities of data? And how do we put that information to work? Whether we're improving the production of a factory, giving city residents real-time updates on where to park, or monitoring our personal health, it's the common Internet of Things platform that brings this diverse information together and provides the common language for the devices and apps to communicate with each other. The process starts with the devices themselves, which securely communicate with an Internet of Things platform. This platform integrates the data from many devices and applies analytics to share the most valuable data with applications that address industry-specific needs. Let's start with a simple example, a car. After taking a long road trip, Rebecca notices that her check engine light has come on. She knows that she needs to have her car looked at by a mechanic, but is not sure whether it's something minor or something that needs immediate attention. As it turns out, the sensor that triggered Rebecca's check engine light monitors the pressure in her brake line. This sensor is one of many monitoring processes throughout the car, which are constantly communicating with each other. A component in the car called the diagnostic bus gathers the data from all these sensors, then passes it to a gateway in the car. The gateway integrates and sorts the data from the sensors. This way, only the most relevant diagnostic information will be transmitted to the manufacturer's platform. But before sending this organized data, the car's gateway and platform must first register with each other and confirm a secure communication. The platform is constantly gathering and storing thousands of bits of information from Rebecca's car and hundreds of thousands of cars like hers, building an historical record in a secure database. The manufacturer has added rules and logic to the platform. So when Rebecca's car sends a signal that her brake fluid has dropped below a recommended level, the platform triggers an alert in her car. The manufacturer also uses the platform to create and manage applications that solve specific issues. In this case, the manufacturer can deploy an application on the platform called the Asset Management System. This application oversees all of their customers' cars on the road, as well as all the parts in their warehouses. It uses the data from Rebecca's car to offer her a potential appointment time to service her car, directions to the nearest certified dealer, and a coupon for the service. What's more, the app will ensure that Rebecca's brakes are covered under her warranty, that the correct replacement part is ordered and then sent to the dealership so it is ready when she arrives. But the manufacturer's analysis does not stop there. They have also deployed a continuous engineering application that tracks not only Rebecca's car, but hundreds of thousands of others, looking for ways to improve the design and manufacturing process of the car itself. If the same problem in her brake line crops up in a critical number of other cars, the manufacturer uses applications custom built for the automobile industry to pinpoint the exact problem. They can see if these cars were made at the same factory, used the same parts, or came off the assembly line on the same day. So what do all these pieces add up to? Streamlined inventory management for the dealer, a better, safer car from the manufacturer. And for Rebecca, it means she can be back on the road faster and get to where she's going safely. All thanks to the Internet of Things.
It seems so nice. I mean, think about it. So much help and all these things are taking place. But look, I mean, the Internet of Things is everything that we're using today. I mean, refrigerators have some sort of identifier on them. Toasters have some sort of, your cell phone, your home phone, these voice over internet telephones offered by Cox Communication, these other internet service providers, your PlayStation 2, your Xbox, your television, all these things are connected to the internet and they're gathering all this data. And what are they doing with this data? And what does James Clapper, the head of the National Security, saying that we want to be able to get into that data and what he's saying about it? And what Jay Johnson, Homeland Security, is talking about? We can just use the Internet of Things the Internet of Things to be able to bring security to America? And what did God tell me in a prophetic encounter and a night vision about all this data today? Join us after this break, because it's going to be just, it's going to blow your mind, but it's going to prepare you for what is ahead. Make sure you join us after the break.
We'll be right back.
The world's waiting for a hope. They're waiting for another conversation that only you and your assignment can provide. Daniel was just faithful to his assignment, and he kept getting called before the kings. They remembered him from generation to generation and said, wait, there's one man who can solve this problem. And I believe that God's releasing people into their assignment. And in their assignment, there's going to be people who hear the whisper of their name. And you're going to find yourself called into places. Maybe you're just a barista. And all of a sudden, the head of the whole coffee company comes in and goes, I need to talk to you. I've heard some things that you've done here. And you're like, am I in trouble? No, it's actually the opposite. We're in trouble. We need you right now. I'm hearing these scenarios all over the world right now where Christians are being placed to solve problems and to cure confusion. And it's not just in one genre or area. The beautiful thing about the kingdom is it works in all aspects of life. It's not just like the easy parts of life. It's the hard parts of life. That's when Christianity shines. That's when we're a light. It's the hard parts of life. There's two options, and all of a sudden we bring another option. There's no answers. Everything's exhausted, and all of a sudden we show up, and it's like, because we showed up, like when Jesus showed up, another option's presented, and people are like, how is God this good?
We spend our whole lives searching for meaning and direction, for something that makes sense. The Bible is supposed to offer that clarity. Is that how it works, though? Because if the Bible is that enlightening, why do so few people spend so little time in it? Maybe we're missing something. Sure, the Bible is the story of God, but it's also our story. If we take God out of the Bible, there is no Bible. But if we take people out of the Bible, there isn't a Bible either. The Bible is our story, with God in the middle of it, as He has always been. Maybe things are about to change. Maybe direction and clarity can actually be found. You can go through the whole Bible using the time you could otherwise waste, and you'll be among friends. That might just change everything. Look in the mirror. Remember today, because time in the scriptures are going to start shifting things. In a month, you're going to realize that you're not alone. Look back in the mirror in a year, and you'll realize that the Bible has changed the way you look at just about everything. It'll be like coming home. The search is over.
In the early morning hours of November 10, 1938, Jews experienced events of a night long remembered when in Germany and Austria they endured Kristallnacht, the night of broken glass.
Thousands of Jewish businesses were destroyed, over 1,000 synagogues burned down, and 30,000 men between the ages of 16 and 60 arrested, sent off to concentration camps or prison. The Nazi regime enacted a devastating law for Jewish immigration, an exorbitant fine that if not paid, Jews would be required to leave behind all their possessions before a single Jew was allowed to leave Germany. We know now that it was only the ominous beginning of the Holocaust to come.
Yet throughout this horrific period, Jews relied on the Bible as a source of strength and hope. Engage with this book of books.
Brought to you by Museum of the Bible.
You know, a lot of people want to abide with the Lord, but they just don't have a plan to do it. You can request that plan today at iabide.org.
Welcome back to VFN TV with your host, Greg Lancaster.
Welcome back. This is crazy, right?
Amazing.
So we're all bought into the system. And make sure you have watched this program and our next program, because it's going to kind of come together and explaining how connected we already are to all this. But we're going to be explaining this. What do you do with all this data? And you're looking at right now, it's 1851. You're seeing up here.
We're going to explain, because all this data, what do they do with it?
When you think about all the different things that are actually connected to the internet, you mentioned a little bit earlier, refrigerators, televisions, phones, you have Fitbit and all these things that are monitoring health, your cars. And
every business that you do business with, their accounting
on the
and all those things,
they said
their searches.
5 years ago, they said that the biggest thing that these companies were going to war for was the television, the living room space, and now you're seeing these TVs have come down way down in prices with more technology to monitor. And the new thing now, Greg, is wearables. So now it's just smartwatches or whether it's, you know, some sort of jewelry, but every single thing on your body is going to be pretty much connected to the internet all the time.
Yeah, and these games that you're getting your children, they have cameras on. They're watching what's going on, like Xboxes and PlayStations and everything your kid's doing, is gathering this database, making that route that's going around. But let's explain a little bit. And this next one is seeing, what do they do with all this data? Because you got this big pile of data, and most people go, they can't do anything with it. But they got ways now.
Absolutely.
IBM explains what they do with this data. As a matter of fact, take a look.
Over the past century, but accelerating over the past couple of decades, we've seen the emergence of a kind of global data field. The planet itself, natural systems, human systems, physical objects, have always generated an enormous amount of data, but we didn't used to be able to hear it, to see it, to capture it. Now we can, because all of this stuff is now instrumented. And it's all interconnected, so we can actually have access to it. So, in effect, the planet has grown a central nervous system.
So there's about 1 billion people using the internet at the moment, and that's, you know, set to grow to probably 2 billion in the next couple of years. And we think that's quite a lot, but over the last 10 years, I've been looking at devices being linked up together using networks, so little sensors on things, you know, these temperature sensors and traffic sensors and flow rate of water and how much electricity, all transmitting data. It won't be long, and it may even have happened already, that there's more things on the internet than there are people on the internet. But that's really what we mean by the Internet of Things. Then you get this sea of data that you just drown in, literally. And there's this triangle that's been quite well documented called the DIKW triangle. That's data, information, knowledge, and the tip at the top is wisdom. The D at the bottom is a sea of data, and when we get this data back home and start doing stuff with it, we apply intelligence to it and transform up that stack. So we go from data into information, information into knowledge, and then glean some wisdom from that. And that's really what it's, or the analytics part of our Smarter Planet story is all about. But the ideal day, I guess, would be that I wake up in the morning and my alarm clock went off at the right time because it had looked in my diary to know when my first meeting was and had backtracked which ferry I need to get and therefore what time I need to get up. The bathroom heater would have been on for half an hour before that time to make the bathroom nice and warm. I'd know that the temperature had been freezing overnight and therefore that my ice was going to need to be scraped off my car, so I need to leave the house 5 minutes earlier. And then I'd be getting a notification, perhaps an audio announcement in my car as I drive to the ferry saying, oh, the ferries are running 5 minutes late, so you know, no need to rush, just take your time. All that stuff is being handled by autonomic systems of little agents looking out on my behalf for the things that it knows I want to do, you know, just making me aware of what's going on so that I can plan my day accordingly. So the system of systems is really what emerges when you start to link these things up. So the fact that you've got isolated systems, for example, my house on its own, with its energy monitoring and the water monitoring and the detecting if the windows and doors are open, that kind of stuff, it's a system, certainly, but it's not a system of systems. But if you start to think about the power grid, first of all, the appliances negotiate with each other. So they say, OK, guys, Andy wants all three of us to operate, but it's going to be bad for the grid if we all go on at the same time. So now suddenly we've got systems talking to each other, so acting smarter because they know about each other, which overall makes the entire system more efficient.
There are more human beings living in cities now as of last year than ever before in human history, and that doesn't look like a trend that's reversing. For every 4 text messages that a pedestrian sends while walking down the sidewalk, the sidewalk she's on is sending an equivalent amount of data. There are sensors all over the place, certainly in the water main. They're registering blockages or not right beneath your feet. Taxis are broadcasting their position and fare status back to dispatch. trains and buses are updating their locations in real time, which people are reading on that street corner. A matrixing of services creates a more resilient thing. And, you know, we can let a water main blockage speak to the road signals above it and do something quickly before police can get there. Soon enough, you know, we will just expect to be told exactly when the bus will arrive.
You know, look at that complex set of relationships among all these complex systems. If we can actually begin to see the patterns in the data, then we have a much better chance of actually getting our arms around this. That's where societies become more efficient. That's where more innovation is sparked. When we talk about a smarter planet, you could say that it has two dimensions. One is to be more efficient, be less destructive, connect different aspects of life which do affect each other in more conscious and deliberate and intelligent ways. But the other is also to generate fundamentally new insights, new activity, new forms of social relations. So you could look at the planet as an information creation and transmission system. And the universe was hearing its information, but we weren't. But increasingly now we can. Early days, baby steps days, we can actually begin to hear the planet talking to us.
We'll be right back. Does your home provide an emotional safe harbor for your children? A place where they feel protected and nurtured? The measure of emotional safety at home can have lasting effects on the psychological well-being of your children.
Here's Dr. James Dobson for Family Talk.
A classic study of child-rearing practices followed over 1,500 boys from pre-adolescence through young adulthood and produced three very interesting findings. First, when love and appreciation are communicated to children, their self-esteem grows. Kids need to feel loved virtually every day of their lives. Now, that's not so surprising, perhaps, but the second finding was the parents of the high self-esteem children were not only strict, but consistent in their discipline as well. If children find that rules at home are not being enforced, they often assume it's because no one cares enough to get involved. Permissiveness leads to insecurity and dependence in children, whereas accountability and responsibility breeds confidence and a high degree of self-respect. The third ingredient that marked the homes of the high self-esteem children was openness. Once the boundaries for behavior had been established, there was freedom for individual personalities to grow and develop. So a home that is more loving, where boundaries are well established and individuality is encouraged, is a safe haven for children, which permits them to blossom into confident adults.
Our role and responsibility is to really set the tone and direction of society and culture. I tell people all the time that the movement that was led by my father was a spiritual movement. It wasn't a civil rights movement. It impacted civil rights, but it was a spiritual movement, and its assignment was to civil rights.
Welcome back to VFN TV with your host, Greg Lancaster.
So you look at this, I mean, that's breaking it down.
Yes.
Every single thing is being monitored, and it's a matter of us giving permission. And we're going to talk about, make sure you stay tuned to this whole program, even in our next program, but Nehemiah talks about that.
Yeah.
The book of Nehemiah is speaking about, they're talking about every part of their body was under control of the government because of their sin.
Wow.
So make sure you want to, all this is coming together, even a prophetic a night vision the Lord gave me about all this data and what's really going on. But think about this, John. I mean, everything, all this data, everybody says, you know, give me data and we can figure things out. We had a program on earlier this last week about how the data is helping us resolve quicker medical problems,
sure,
in helping people cure. And it's like, you know, the fountain of youth, how everybody's searching, trying to live longer. But the commitment to God is I'll let you live for eternity if you make Jesus Christ the Lord of your life. But you look at this, I think about this, John. I think about families. You know, you have everybody has some sort of PlayStation game thing or Xbox or cell phone or
Apple TV, Roku.
Apple TV, computers, and they don't, the family doesn't even communicate.
No.
But they're all on this particular, they find out what's happening with their family when, even though they live in the same house, when they look at someone else's Facebook in their own household, it's like, hey, I see you were talking to so-and-so.
Right.
And but the interesting thing about that is you may have a father that's working in his office in his home. You may have the mother who is reading a book or something through audio books or Amazon iBooks or something in another room. You have the children doing what they're doing.
What is that exactly?
Whatever you're doing is part of it too. Then you have the brother, you know, son doing something, and you have the daughter doing something, posting, you know, social media or whatever. And they don't even know it. But you know what? The people who over the internet, they know everything you're doing. And they're gathering all that data. Oh, well, she's got some issues with this, and he's got some stuff with this. And, you know, he's struggling with something because he's searching for medication for his heart. And and she likes these kind of books. So she obviously likes to think about relationships outside of her relationship because he reads fantasy, you know, books.
Novels,
and they're building all this stuff up on us. And the families don't even know. When you sit around the table as a family, the family now has been so divided and so isolated. But understand, it's not divided or isolated away from this particular image, this thing being created. It knows more than anybody would know. I mean, think about bits and pieces of information. And you can see that pyramid right here where they gather that together and it's got the data in the box. This huge sea of data. Sure. What does that mean? They build knowledge from that. They gather information from that. And the very point, they say we get wisdom from that. Wisdom comes from God. You don't have to have computers, but it makes me think about the knowledge of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. He said, once they eat from this tree, you know, we'll talk more about that, but once they eat from this tree, then they'll be like us, Adam and Eve. So we need to move them out of the garden so they don't take up and eat from and live forever in that condemned state.
It's pretty amazing because you see all this information that's being, like you said, data that's being connected and given on a daily basis. And people are happy to get rid of all the data. They're happy to have connectivity. But that's all that information is going somewhere. And there's other people that are trying to take advantage of your data.
Look how far that information went. It went through everybody's back door, every business you can imagine. It went all the way. You know, you have people complaining about New York. It's like your information went through New York.
Yeah.
Everything you've ever done on the internet, every single image, page, whatever you pull up goes everywhere like the speed of light.
Amazing.
It's very amazing. It's things, you know. You know, it's what we call the furnace. You know, it's like, understand, no matter what people are doing, and we all need a Savior, and that we're saved by grace and not by works, but we have to proclaim the gospel, even in this day when the image is being built and created. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so glad that you've joined us. Don't forget you can join us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Download our app and sign up for our newsletter, The Torch,
at vfnkb.com.
I've enjoyed our time together. God bless.